You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Even though the Republican Party often advocates a smaller, less intrusive federal government, the Justice Department is presently considering a proposal to expand the powers of the so-called Patriot Act to include provisions that will diminish our rights of privacy. The proposed Patriot Act, too, would eliminate all the gains made in civil liberties since the Eugene McCarthy era. Jerry Quickly of Pacifica Station KPFK spoke with civil rights attorney Stephen Rohde regarding the so-called Patriot Act, too.
In an ominous reversal of roles in the aftermath of 9/11, instead of a democracy where our government is open and the people enjoy their privacy, as a result of a breathtaking series of new laws and policies imposed by the Bush administration, today, the government functions largely in secret, and individual privacy is being invaded on an unprecedented scale. Despite President Bush's assurances that we are in a fight for our principles and that our first responsibility is to live by them, including human dignity and limits on the power of the state, his administration, including Attorney General John Ashcroft's Department of Justice and Secretary Donald Rumsfeld's Department of Defense, has implemented new laws and regulations which simultaneously empower the government, under the veil of secrecy, to indefinitely detain individuals in the United States, citizens and non-citizens alike, incommunicado, without charging them with any crimes, and without offering them access to lawyers or their families, concealing it all from public scrutiny. Meanwhile, the government is eavesdropping on confidential attorney-client communications, conducting unannounced sneak and peek searches of homes and offices, restricting the Freedom of Information Act, implementing a vast system of mining private data from millions of people, secretly searching personal records at libraries and bookstores, encouraging Americans to spy on other Americans, and reinstituting the surveillance and infiltration of domestic religious and political organizations. Systematically, in the name of fighting terrorism and protecting national security, the Bush administration has inverted a cornerstone of the foundation upon which the founders built our constitutional democracy, namely that in America, the government is granted limited enumerated powers and, as far as possible, conducts its affairs openly and in public, while the people reserve unto themselves the widest possible array of personal liberties and individual freedoms, including the fundamental right to privacy. The magnitude of these sweeping changes in the delicate and critical balance between the power of the state and the rights of the people has yet to be fully comprehended by the general public. Many people in the United States are entirely oblivious of the fact that their precious constitutional rights have already been seriously abridged. And now, on top of all this, it has just been announced that the Justice Department is considering legislative proposals that would significantly expand the federal government's power to investigate, detain, and punish suspected terrorists in secret and without court supervision, according to a preliminary draft of a bill disclosed last week. Known as the USA Patriot Act II, under this law, the government could declare individuals, not just groups, as foreign powers, subjected to clandestine surveillance under looser standards than would apply in criminal cases, and it would permit such surveillance against a U.S. citizen suspected of spying on a foreign power, even if the alleged suspicious conduct was not itself criminal. Taken as a whole, the new proposals would constitute a far-reaching invitation to Congress to ratify the Bush administration's get-tough legal approach in the war on terrorism. The January 9 document, labeled Confidential, Not for Distribution, and officially titled the Domestic Security Enhancement Act of 2003, was posted on the Internet by the Center for Public Integrity, a Washington-based nonprofit organization. What are we going to do about all this? All of us have grown up with an instinctive belief that if government is abusing its powers through the passage of unconstitutional laws or the raw pursuit of unconstitutional activities, Our ultimate protection rested in the courts and eventually in the United States Supreme Court. To date, there have been valiant lower court judges who've exhibited the courage to uphold the Constitution in the face of arrogant assertions by the Department of Justice that such rulings will threaten national security. For these judges, the issues we're examining are not merely fodder for academic or political debate. They are real and concrete legal questions affecting the delicate balance between freedom and security. It takes brave men and women to remain true to their oath to uphold the Constitution when government lawyers threaten them with risking the lives and safety of the rest of us. But eventually these cases will reach the United States Supreme Court, and I have no expectation that the court that installed George W. Bush in office is going to overturn his laws. Yet again, it will be the people who will have to stand up. On this occasion, again in American history, it is the people who must fulfill their time-honored duty to restore the fundamental principles upon which our nation was founded. That task cannot be left to judges or politicians or anyone else. It's our duty, the duty of every person who lives in America, citizen or non-citizen alike, to take back the government, to lead it back to the true path from which it has strayed so far, to light the path to liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Stephen Rohde. Are all the provisions new, or are these truly new heinous provisions, or did they exist in some codified version somewhere in American law prior to the Patriot Act?
Much of the Patriot Act and now what we're calling the Patriot Act II is new. It's new because no government, no administration up till now, up till 9/11, had the audacity or the excuse to try to get such laws passed. I'm convinced that John Ashcroft had much of the USA Patriot Act in his far right-hand drawer of his desk.
Yeah.
And that with the excuse of 9/11, this was pulled out, a 350-page law, rushed through Congress with very little deliberation, with very little public debate, and the government began to get awesome powers that in many ways are unprecedented under our constitutional system.
Now, I think one of the most outrageous of those powers is that the Patriot Act really seems to represent a fundamental stripping of our constitutionally protected rights, in as much as it can strip us of our right even to trial by jury, it can strip us of our right to be held and charged with anything. They can hold you basically in absentia anywhere in the world and never charge you with anything.
Exactly. Whatever people think about the concept of due process, it includes a right to a lawyer, a right to know what charges have been brought against you, a right to promptly be brought to a trial, to not be held incommunicado. And systematically, every one of those rights has been violated both by the USA Patriot Act 1 and 2 now. 2 is sinister because it appears that the government for the last 16 months or so has looked at what courts are doing, what civil libertarians are objecting to, and have made a new laundry list of provisions to check off what they overlooked the first time around. Now, my only hope is that coming now, coming after 16 months when people have been speaking out, when some radio stations like this network and a few others have been devoting time and attention to the USA Patriot Act and the assault on civil liberties, that we're just not going to take this new law laying down. And I think it's so important for people immediately to educate themselves and to resist the new law. The other thing that this new law gives us an opportunity to do is to really test the opposition party in Congress. A lot of politicians have regretted their vote in favor of the Patriot Act. There was only one courageous senator, Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, who voted against the USA Patriot Act. So now these men and women who have claimed to believe in the Constitution are going to be tested. Will they demand that there be open congressional hearings on this new law? Will they demand that the government lay out what the necessity is for these new awesome powers? And will they force the government to explain what they've been doing under the old law so far Ashcroft and others have scoffed at Congress whenever they attempted to hold the administration accountable. They didn't need Congress. Well, they're coming back now to Congress to pass new laws. And it seems to me in those circumstances, it's an entirely legitimate question to ask, what have you done with the powers we gave you 16 months ago?
Civil rights attorney Stephen Rohde speaking with Jerry Quickly of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. Special thanks to Brian DeShazer for assistance with that report.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. Shut up. Do not attempt to think or depression may occur. Stay in your home. Curfew is at 7 p.m. sharp after work.
Jello Biafra with a message from our sponsors. Across the country and around the world, people concerned about the impending war with Iraq are planning creative actions to ensure that their voices get heard. In one of the most extraordinary actions, 750 women in Australia recently took off their clothing and formed a giant heart, bearing the words, "No War." Peace Watch spoke recently with Grace Knight, one of the organizers of that action.
I actually saw a group of women from Marin County, which I have to say I don't know where that is in America.
California.
But I saw a picture of, it looked like about 37 women who had taken their clothes off in a field to spell out the words, "No War." I was so inspired by what they did because from my own point of view, that would have been excruciating for me to take my clothes off publicly.
Mm-hmm.
I was also extremely frustrated about my own Prime Minister not hearing myself or my friends and appeared to be totally disinterested in what the population of Australia had to say about him involving our country in this war. We felt that we didn't have a voice, that no one was really going to hear. I'm a singer and a songwriter, and I'm a little bit famous in Australia. So I was actually preparing my next album, and I realized that every song I was writing was an anti-war song. Before I saw the Marin County women, I had started writing an anti-war song myself, and my tears just kept blinding me. I couldn't write a chorus. I just kept writing these verses.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of jumped up and said, "This is ridiculous. I have to stop what I'm doing, stop working on this album, and bloody well do something." And it was the Marin County women that inspired me. Now, how we got 750 women was, you'll have to talk to God about that. But what we did was we wrote an invitation inviting the women of our shire to participate in putting out a message that our Prime Minister and our male politicians would definitely get to see. We organised paparazzi to be there, and the news crew to be there to absolutely make sure. There's no point in women lying on the hill naked, feeling terribly uncomfortable if no one gets to see the message. So I had to try to convince them that what they did was actually going to work. It wasn't just a case of them, you know, finding a way to make themselves feel better, but that they would feel better, but that their word would also travel around the world. What it was I needed 67 women to spell out the words "no war" in the fashion that I imagined on this hill. When we sent out the invitation, we asked all the women to send that on to other female friends via the internet. And then, of course, on the day, I was totally gobsmacked when, you know, by the end of the women coming in, that there were, in fact, 750, which equates to 5% of the female population of this shire.
And so you did more than spell out the word "no war."
When it came to the day, we just said, okay, women, let's just make a great big heart around the letters. And really, that was it.
Why do you think so many women were willing to participate in an action that I'm sure had to make many of them feel uncomfortable?
For me, the idea was excruciating. I'm just not one of these babes that can go on the beach. It's just not me. I'm not that way. And I love the women that are that way. But they were also the ones that inspired us, you know, scaredy cats. And there were women there in their 80s who had to look after their husbands from the Second World War. And they, in interviews, they had said, "We are here because of our broken men. Our men are broken spiritually, physically, mentally, from the last war, the last World War." There were Vietnam vets' wives there saying, "We're here because of what our husbands suffered in Vietnam." There were a lot of women there that turned up because they were furious that our Prime Minister wasn't interested in listening to them. They wanted to do more than sign a petition. They wanted to know that they were going to cause a stir. And we expected to cause a stir in Australia, but we had no idea that this would go out across the world media the way it has. There was a two-pronged effect here, which is really what we wanted. One was to send the message out to our politicians, and the other one, which was maybe even more important, was to show the other women of our country and around the world that all it takes is like-minded women getting together, and that you can make a difference and you can have not just a voice but a very, very powerful voice.
Did you at any point have any fear that the daringness of this particular type of action might not lend credibility to the message that you wanted to get across?
I needed to explain the kind of juxtaposition of men in uniforms. The exact opposite of that, of any uniform, is nakedness, is women naked. Someone mentioned, you know, don't you feel like you're debasing your body? But I had to say, look, I would, if that's how you perceive it, that obvious, that's your choice. That's your choice to perceive it that way. But I would be prepared to debase my body in your terms rather than look at the body bags coming home and look at the footage of innocent people in Iraq being slaughtered. Mm-hmm. And if that means that I have to go in a paddock and be uncomfortable for 40 minutes, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny price to pay.
Grace Knight, you've been working on a new anti-war song. Can you recite some of the lyrics for us?
How the hell did we end up here? Life is worthless to live in fear. Are our children's lives merely dust to be wiped from the coat of the president? Who owns the voice that speaks for me? Caught in a trap only he can't see. Open the door, I'm not going in, because this is wrong. How the hell did it come this far when we send our children to die in war? No fucking way will you lay your hands on a child of mine to fulfill your plans. You bastards of war, you took your turn. You're running our planet into the ground. Now you sanction a dying child's last breath. Won't stop till you own the rest.
Australian folk singer and activist Grace Knight. Finally, tonight, Peace Watch commentator Utah Phillips offers this perspective.
I spend a lot of time these days going to demonstrations and vigils, talking to people who support the war. It can be pretty threatening, but I always find there are people there, and I don't mean policemen, but there are people there who will protect you. I don't go there to shout or to lecture, but to ask questions, real questions. Questions I really need answers to. When I joined the Army, it was kind of like somebody that I had been brought up to respect, wearing a suit and a tie, maybe a little older, in my neighborhood. Think about yourself in your neighborhood and this happening to you. He walked up to me, put his arm around my shoulder and said, "See that fellow on the corner there? He's really evil and has got to be killed. Now, you trust me, you'll go do it for me, won't you? The reasons are a little complicated, but I won't bother to explain, but you go and do it for me, will you?" Well, if somebody did that to you in your neighborhood, you'd think it was foolish. You wouldn't do it. Well, what makes it more reasonable to do it on the other side of the world? That's one question. Well, now hook it into this. If I was to go down into the middle of your town and bomb a house, and then shoot the people coming out in flames, the newspapers would say, "Homicidal maniac." The cops would come and they'd drag me away. They'd say, "You're responsible for that." The judge would say, "You're responsible for that." The jury would say, "You're responsible for that." And they would give me the hot squad or they'd put me away for years and years and years, you see? But now exactly the same behavior, sanctioned by the state, could get me a medal and elected to Congress. Exactly the same behavior. I want the people I'm talking to reconcile that contradiction for themselves and for me. The third question, well, I take that one a lot to peace people. There's a lot of moral ambiguity going on around here. Peace people who say, "Well, we got to support the troops," and they wear the yellow ribbon and wrap themselves in the flag, say, "We don't want what happened to the Vietnam vets to happen to these vets when they come home, people getting spit on." Well, I think it's terrible to spit on anybody. I think that's a consummate act of violence, and it's a terrible mistake, and I'm really sorry that happened. But what did happen? Song Mai happened. My Lai happened. The defoliation of a country happened. Tons of pesticides happened. 30,000 MIAs in Vietnam happened. And it unhinged some people, made them real mad. And what really, really made them mad was the denial of personal responsibility, saying, "I was made to do it. I was told to do it. I was doing my duty. I was serving my country." Well, we've already talked about that. Now, it is morally ambiguous to wrap yourself in the flag and wear those ribbons. And it borders on moral cowardice. I don't mean to sound stern. Well, yes, I do. But what does the Nuremberg Declaration say? There's no superior order that can cancel your conscience. Nations will be judged by the standard of the individual. Look, the president makes choices. The Congress makes choices. The Chief of Staff makes choices. The officers make choices. All those choices percolate down to the individual trooper with his finger on the trigger, the individual pilot with his thumb on the button that drops the bomb. If that trigger doesn't get pulled, if that button doesn't get pushed, all those other choices vanish as though they never were. They're meaningless. So what is the critical choice? What is the one that we've got to think about and get to? And friends, if that trigger gets pulled, if that button gets pushed and that bomb falls, and you say, "I support the troops," you're an accomplice. I don't want to be accomplice, do you? And I don't want to dehumanize anyone. I don't want to take away anybody's humanity. Humans are able to make moral decisions, moral ethical decisions. When we tell the trooper who pulls the trigger or the soldier who turns the wheel that releases oil into the Persian Gulf that they're not responsible, just following orders, just doing their duty, have no choice, bypassing them, making them a part of the machine, we deny them their humanity, their responsibility for their actions and the consequences of those actions. Look, I've been a soldier. I don't want any moral loophole. I need to take personal responsibility for my actions. And if we don't learn how to do this, we're going to keep on going to war again and again and again. Well, a final question. When I'm at these war support demonstrations, the question I ask most is, you think that people on the other side of the world need to be killed on the strength of voices coming out of a box? Sounds pretty silly when you put it that way, doesn't it? I want to know from the person standing in front of me, what part of you is responding to those voices? Can you tell me? What makes you feel that way? Who in you are those voices talking to? Who's really answering? And why? I hear those voices. I have those feelings. The violence is in me, too.
Up next, this creative interpretation of President Bush by the Christmas Coup comedy Players Radio Theater Troupe.
Throughout the 20th century, small groups of men seized control of great nations, built armies and arsenals, and set out to dominate the weak and intimidate the world. This call of history has come to the right country. I would work together, along with Secretary of State Powell, Vice President Cheney, American business, and corporate criminals to transform America, reorganize our government for ambitions of conquest. During the last 2 years, we have seen what can be accomplished when we work together. We will set the course of history. Seldom has history offered a greater opportunity to do so much. I am proposing the ideology of power and domination. We exercise power without the people. The course of this nation does not depend on the decisions of the people. Members of Congress, distinguished citizens, and fellow citizens, your enemy is not surrounding your country, your enemy is ruling your country. As we fight this war, we will remember where it began, here in our own country.
Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Nathan Thompson, Mark Torres, and Brian DeShazer of the Pacifica Radio Archives, Chris Harlan, and Sam Silsby. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we'd urge you to visit Pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champaign Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.